Hello, everyone. I am Catherine Spires, and this is Smart Mouth. This week's replay episode is with Oriana Corin, who is a very talented photographer who often photographs food. If you want to go check out her work, you can look at her Instagram, which is Oriana Corin. Let me spell that for you. O-R-I-A-N-A, last name K-O-R-E-N. And we talk about banana pudding in this episode, which is something that I think I'm going to have to make for myself now. Also, if you want to follow Smart Mouth on social media, we are in a Facebook group, not a page, but a group. You can search for it in Facebook, Smart Mouth, two words. Also on Instagram at Smart Mouth Podcast, and on Patreon, which is at patreon.com/smartmouthpodcast. You can go and check out the different levels and rewards there. Also, I know I've been talking a lot about an upcoming newsletter. You can sign up for it right now. There's nothing on the page, but if you go to smartmouth.substack.com, Substack is spelled S-U-B-S-T-A-C-K, smartmouth.substack.com, you can sign up for the free version. Later in the year, I'll be asking people to pay for it, but you can start there if you would like. If you enjoy Smart Mouth, go on and tell a friend about it. Now, on to the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Smart Mouth. I'm your host, Catherine Spires, here to talk to my favorite people about their favorite foods. Before we get into today's episode, remember to send me your pictures of all the delicious food that you're eating around the world. You can email them to me at smartmouthpod@gmail.com, or you can just follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Smart Mouth Podcast. We have a guest doggy here today. Michelle brought Dobby in. That's her dog's name, Dobby. And she is very intrigued by all the different smells at this house. But she's not our guest of honor today. Our guest of honor is Oriana Corin. Hi, Oriana.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
So you are someone that people have probably seen your work. You're an editorial photographer. You do a lot of food culture, a lot of travel, a lot of beautiful things.
Thank you.
That must be a fun job. Is that a shitty thing to say? People say that to me and I'm always like, let me tell you something. So I'm sorry I said that already. What's your job like?
No, it is actually a ton of fun. But I do think there are moments where it's not particularly fun.
What are those moments?
For instance, earlier this year, I had a travel shoot that I had to do for the New York Times. But they also had not paid me on time for a previous shoot.
Ugh.
So I was driving to Valle de Guadalupe with a friend.
Yeah.
And we didn't know if we were going to have money to stay in our hotel for the 3 days that we were supposed to be shooting.
Oh my God. That is such an encapsulation of the life of a freelancer, though. You're off to this place that people will pay a lot of money to go to and everyone wants to go to and is very jealous of you. But you're like, I straight up don't know if I can buy a tortilla here.
Yeah, it was a mess. And then I got sick 2 days later.
Ay, ay, ay. Man.
Like sweating in my bed sheets, sick. it was messy.
Did you get good photos?
Yeah, the photos were dope. I got the cover story for April, so that
nice.
Was pretty exciting.
That is. Yeah. That congratulations.
Thank you.
That is awesome.
Thank you very much.
So you recently moved to Los Angeles.
I did. It'll be 2 years on the 4th of July.
You showed up here right in the middle of the war zone because LA gets nuts.
It's not as bad as Chicago, though.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. No, when I was living in Chicago, I remember walking down Grand with my, at the time, boyfriend, now husband, and a firework just like flew over our heads and crashed into a billboard. And then we ran back to his apartment because we were terrified.
That's a lot.
Yeah, so this is mild.
Okay. You're like, this is laid back California.
Yeah, this
shit.
Is great.
This is fine.
I can deal with this.
So were you born and raised in Chicago?
I wasn't. I was actually born and raised in South Florida, a little ways off of Fort Lauderdale Beach, and got the hell out of Dodge as soon as I could.
You know, no judgment, but I hear that a lot from people who were born in Florida.
Because Florida is terrifying.
Okay.
It's weird.
Yeah?
Yeah. Oh, it's so weird. Ugh.
The only weird thing that I know about, I guess, I know there's the whole like Florida man thing about news articles. Yeah, Florida, it's a real man thing. And it's always something upsetting. But I read this New Yorker feature years ago that really stuck with me because I'm very, very afraid of snakes. Mm-hmm. And it was about how people bring in exotic animals through the Miami airport and then can't find buyers for them. Mm-hmm. And so they just let them go. And so there's all kinds of...
Yes. The Everglades has a python problem.
Right. And they're non-native, correct?
They're not native. So Florida has this thing where, and I didn't realize this was a Florida thing until I left out of Florida. But growing up, I'd be driving around with my parents and you'd see like exotic pet show. So there were these shows where people were buying exotic animals, yeah. animals that are not native to Florida, particularly snakes.
Yeah.
And then the snakes would get too big and they just toss them out into the wilderness.
I don't even know what to do with that. And I want to get really judgmental and stereotypical and be like, well, of course, the kind of person who would buy a snake would also just let it go at
that
some point.
That is true.
What a horrible thing to say, but prove me wrong, snake people.
Yeah, so now there's been open season on pythons in the Everglades for the last couple of years.
You mean hunting?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the state of Florida is like, yeah, during this period of time, you can go and kill as many pythons as you'd like because we need to get rid of them.
Is there a bounty on them?
I don't think so.
Okay. It's just like have at it.
But I like, wouldn't be surprised.
Okay.
Yeah. Because there was one python that was notorious because the python was eating alligators.
Oh my God. I'm going to have nightmares tonight. Yeah. This is bonkers. Let's like switch over to something much
Sounds
more pleasant
good.
About the South. And that is today's food topic, which yes. is... banana pudding.
Banana pudding.
You gave me a selection of foods that were all sort of Southern identified, and I was like, let me look into banana pudding because I bet there's nothing there. And then I did, and I was like, wow,
I'm so excited.
Kind of
about
interesting.
This. It's like my favorite treat and my favorite dessert, and I actually don't know much about the history of banana pudding.
Okay.
So I'm very excited.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, so we're going to have to get into the whole thing about is it even Southern, but we'll get to that a little
Ooh.
Bit because. This is actually kind of cool. This is a little factoid I did know that's a little fun little pub trivia thing. Bananas are actually berries.
Wait, what?
Yeah, botanically speaking, they are berries.
I didn't know that.
Isn't that cool?
Wait, how are they part of the berry family?
It's because of, I'm not sciencey,
Don't
but
worry.
It's like they grow off the tree
mm-hmm.
and what they are is a berry. They're not a root, they're not a branch, they're not a leaf, they're
that makes
a berry.
Sense. Okay.
Yeah, I'm sure there's like a, that's my little layperson explanation.
That's so cool.
I just wanted you all to understand that, so that's why I explained it that way. And bananas are native to Australia and Southeast Asia. They're probably domesticated,
mm-hmm.
specifically in Papua New Guinea for the first time.
Ooh.
Initially, as with most fruits and vegetables in the world, there were tons of different kinds of
yeah,
bananas.
Yes.
Different sizes, different shapes, different colors. That's largely been lost,
yeah.
at least in our part of the world.
Yep.
But they did exist for a little bit in the United States because there is a cookbook that talks about bananas and all it says is like, here, bananas exist. You could serve these
what?
If you want. And it talked about the way to display them, and it said intermix the yellow, the pink, and the ladyfinger bananas, which must have meant small bananas.
Yeah.
Which is so for
That's
a while,
so
they there were different varieties available in the United States, but you know what we love in this country for our food is for it to travel well.
Yeah.
So that, whoop, Dobby, you're a little wilder than Matilda.
God damn it.
I'm just protecting.
Dobby, I'm doing a story.
Dobby says sorry.
Now there are some differentiation of varieties in Southeast Asia
mm-hmm.
still, and so like if you're in Thailand there can be different kinds and they'll use them for the type of cooking that you want to do or how sweet they are. They
right.
might just eat them plain, but you know how we talk about bananas and plantains?
Yes.
So that's something that only happens in North and South America.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and the difference is just their flavor.
Huh.
I mean, I know that they look different,
yeah.
but in terms of why we call them different things, bananas are sweet. In fact, a lot of like banana nerds call them dessert bananas.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. I also grew up eating plantains. Half of my family is Haitian. They're
uh-huh.
from Haiti. So there was never a meal where we didn't have plantains. Oh, and I remember as a kid being very confused about plantains and bananas because they looked exactly the same. Mm-hmm. But there was always that differentiation of like, this is a banana and that is a plantain.
Yeah. And it has to do with flavor and how we like choose to prepare them. That's like crazy. These bananas go in breakfast and desserts. Plantains you can do in savory dishes. Yeah. Although if you go back, some of the cookbooks that first started mentioning bananas in North America in the late 1800s, they talked about frying bananas.
Yeah.
Which, in fact, there are some different banana pudding recipes.
Ooh, I'm all ears.
Some of them do call for frying the bananas.
What?
Which is just like maximum indulgence, don't you think?
God. Yeah, like just a good caramelized piece of banana.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I love it when
I'm salivating.
It's like, yeah. Now, what you want to do with this piece of fruit is you want to fry it in butter. That's the first step.
Yep, that sounds about right.
I mean, why not, right?
Nothing tastes better than a banana fried in butter with a little bit of sugar on top.
You know, I'm trying to watch what I eat these days. Researching this one, especially the articles that had pictures, I was
killer.
Like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. I know. I went on a banana pudding tear recently.
Yeah.
And had it from three different places here in LA. So I had it first at Comfort LA. It's like on the border of the Arts District. It's really in Skid Row.
Okay.
And it's a pretty nondescript place, but it's Southern food. It's mm-hmm. soul food, with a like organic twist. Mm-hmm. But man, let me tell you, this banana pudding was like the banana pudding that I grew up with, which is the banana, Jell-O pudding mix.
Okay. Okay.
The vanilla wafer mm-hmm. and then just the raw banana slices. Mm-hmm. And they might have done something else to it because it was the airiest banana pudding I've ever had. It was kind of like a mousse as opposed to a pudding.
Well, do you think that maybe they made it themselves as opposed to it being box?
I think they did.
Yeah, this is really interesting because there are some people who only will eat it from the box.
Yeah, I know.
That's the way they like it.
I used to be that person.
And then you were changed.
Yeah. I was talking to my dad one day when I was in Chicago. I was really craving banana pudding. And he was like, oh, you should talk to your grandmother about her banana pudding recipe. And I was like, she has a recipe? So immediately got on the phone. I was like, Grandma, what's the banana pudding recipe? And I didn't know that she made her custard from scratch.
Oh, yeah.
Made an egg custard and flavored it with a little bit of vanilla flavoring mm-hmm. and some mashed up day-old banana. And then she used sliced fresh banana to layer with the vanilla wafers. And I have to say, I prefer the custard, like homemade custard version of banana pudding versus the Jell-O box pudding.
That makes sense. So you had to come around and be indoctrinated in the custard.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't know that there was any other version of banana pudding.
And I think a lot of people don't. And wait, I'm sorry. Did your grandma make it with the store-bought Nilla wafers?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, she didn't make her own wafers. Man, if she's got a wafer recipe.
That would really blow your mind?
Yeah. I'm gonna have to call her tonight and ask her about that.
It could be. Yeah, that would be amazing. And you should find out. In North America, the bananas we eat, they're all Cavendish bananas.
I remember hearing about this from a friend of mine who's an engineer who just also knows a lot of random things.
Yeah.
And we were like in a car one day and she's like, oh, here's the thing about bananas. And I think I remember her saying that like the original banana that was imported to the States, mm-hmm. like that species of banana doesn't exist anymore. And the flavor is different from what we're accustomed to.
Oh,
which
okay.
was mind-blowing to me.
You know, that could well be the case because we find that happens a lot with fruit in general.
Mm-hmm.
Because fruit was initially imported because it tasted so good. And then when the more money it made, they're like, let's make even more money.
Yep.
Apples are really famous for that. So you're a little bit younger than me, but still, do you count as an 80s kid?
I think so. I was born in 88.
Kind of.
Yeah.
But I even though I grew up in Washington State, I feel like it was Granny Smith and Red Delicious apples.
Yeah, that's what I grew up with in Florida.
Yeah, just the two kinds, right?
So, and I love apples. They're one of my favorite fruits in the world. And it literally blew my mind when I found out that there was more than two varieties
yeah.
of apples.
You already liked apples, even just those two kinds?
Yeah.
I hate those two kinds.
I do. Now I do as well.
Yeah, because
like,
the heritage, I guess, varieties that are coming back and that you can buy in your average grocery store now are so much better.
Yeah. And also, I just remember Red Delicious being really like mealy and bland. Yes. And it was always bruised for some reason.
Yeah. Because they just wanted it to look shiny. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. Shiny on the outside.
Yeah.
And that's all that mattered.
And I liked the Granny Smith apples because at least it was tart. So it had some kind of flavor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now these days I'm like really big into the Pinata and Pacific Rose varieties.
Pinata?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Whole Foods 365.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. I will have to look into that.
It's a game changer.
Gosh, I'm kind of excited. I mean, this is going to even make me go to Whole Foods, which I'm kind of like, I don't know about that.
I feel that.
But if you say that there's a thing called a pinata apple, I guess I'll try it.
Sprouts has a really good variety of apples, too.
Okay. So a banana pudding is similar to a trifle, the like British dessert.
Yes.
We're talking about layers of a custard, layers of fruit, layers of some sort of cream that's different than a custard, mm-hmm. and then the, I don't know, starch layer, the cookies, which now are very specifically Nilla wafers, which were, actually we'll get to that later because I can't remember off the top of my head. So it could also be shortbread.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, any sort of white, light, cushiony thing.
Yeah, I had a version of, I think my favorite in the city, of banana pudding from Go Get 'em Tiger.
Oh, they do really good work there.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And I think it was like leftover buttermilk biscuits was the starch.
That's a good idea.
Oh my God. It was heavenly.
Oh, I like that.
I went like 2 days in a row. Just for the pudding.
That's okay. That one's good enough that our visitors or our listeners who are not in LA, when you come and visit LA, go to Go Get 'em Tiger.
Absolutely.
It's really good. And specifically go to the one on Hollywood Boulevard because they've got a nice little patio area.
There's always somewhere to sit. They play the best jams. Sometimes you might see a celebrity.
Yes. Which is the main reason people come to LA. Mm-hmm. So you get it all in one spot. It's good. So we got to figure out why people consider banana pudding to be specifically Southern.
Yes.
Because there's some facts that make it seem like, oh, of course it's Southern. But there's a lot that makes it seem like, oh, maybe not initially.
Yeah.
Okay. So the writer James Fenimore Cooper, he mentioned in his journals finding bananas himself in the United States in the 1820s.
Mm-hmm.
They started showing up. But he was like a northern fancy person.
Okay.
So maybe this was like for rich people in the 1820s, like a rare treat. Do you remember, did you read the Laura Ingalls Wilder books?
Of course I did.
Okay. This has been like a running theme in a lot of episodes, but whatever. The one that takes place when she's like 18 and she goes to a birthday party and for dessert, everyone gets an orange because it was the rich family.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, wait, what?
Back when fruit was a dang treat, a real treat.
It was mind-blowing. Growing up in Florida where there are oranges everywhere, I'm like, we have oranges. We're not rich.
Oh, you know. For a little kid, that must have been such a disconnect.
Yeah, I was like, wait, what? I don't get this.
That's really funny. I like that. So then there was a cookbook author, Eleanor Parkinson. She described them in her book that was published in 1846. So they were around, but she did indeed describe them, as in telling the readers, this is what a banana is.
Okay,
so they weren't common.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Then, post-Civil War, more railroads going up across, back and forth, crisscrossing the United States. A lot more shipping between Central America and the South, mm-hmm. particularly. Important to remember, a lot of shipping from Central America, specifically into New Orleans.
That makes total sense.
Yeah, yeah. So banana production had expanded into Central America from, you know, Australia, South Pacific areas.
Right.
So boats were going between, like, the Panama area to New Orleans, and there were more bananas.
Yeah.
So that might kind of be the genesis of the Southern connection.
Yeah. I mean, I've always thought about it as a regional delicacy.
Mm-hmm.
And it really hit me, I think, after I left the South to move to Chicago and then returned again. My husband and I were staying with his family, his dad and his stepmom in like literal buttfuck North Carolina. We were not around anything. But I was really excited because I was always talking about how good Southern food was. And I was like, oh, banana pudding and peach cobbler. I just grew up knowing these things as Southern.
Okay.
And when I was in the Midwest, no one that I spoke to knew about any of that stuff unless they had Southern family members.
I see.
So I think the connection for me really became clear, actually, when I was living on the south side of Chicago. And a lot of the people who live on the south side, a lot of the black folks are descendants of people who moved from the south during the Great Migration to the north.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them are from like the Delta area, Mississippi, Louisiana. Like, does Alabama count as part of the Delta area?
Michelle says yes. So yeah, we'll go with it.
Yeah. And they were very familiar with banana pudding. So I had a group of friends who were like very firmly on the it has to be made out of a Jell-O box.
Okay.
And then there were friends who were like, no. You have to make it from scratch with custard.
All right.
And then everyone else was just like, we don't know what the hell you're talking about. I've never had a banana pudding. What is this?
Like, yeah. I mean, this is embarrassing, but I don't think I really had ever heard of it really until mm-hmm. Magnolia Bakery in New York.
Yes.
Went and made it famous for basics like me.
Yep.
So as someone who was born and raised on the West Coast, just like kind of a non-issue.
Yeah. And I was always really surprised when I found out that one of the big sellers at Magnolia Bakery was banana pudding, but it's also called Magnolia Bakery. And I feel like that's a nod to Southern treats and desserts.
Yeah, it must be.
Yeah.
Or New York is a city of transplants like LA. So all the Southern people were going there for banana pudding.
Yeah. It's very interesting. I also wonder, too, just given the timeline, like, if you think about what was going on in the country at the time, just the issue of free labor that came with slavery.
Yeah.
Black people being in the kitchen cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Movement of slaves from the Caribbean into the United States and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
So that, like, when I think about banana pudding, I always think about, like, well, if it's Southern and there are specific places in the South where people are really into banana pudding, because there's this thing that happens where it's like, depending on where you are in the South, there are certain things in terms of desserts that you're proud about. Whether it's like a coconut cake or a caramel cake or a, you know, a peach or a berry cobbler or a banana pudding. But it seems like the people who are really like gung-ho about banana puddings come from Southern places that are maybe kind of tropical. And you could probably trace back the fact that like maybe there was some movement of people from the Caribbean or from parts of Africa where bananas were present, and there was already a knowledge of that being shared. And then also thinking about the British influence in the South, like the fact that it's derived from a trifle makes so much sense.
Yeah.
I had not thought about that until you mentioned it, but I was like, yeah, this makes absolute sense.
Yeah. I like your theories.
These Thank you.
Very interesting.
I think about food a lot.
Well, I mean, you're taking pictures of it. How could you not?
Yeah. That's how I feel about it. I'm interested in food aesthetically, of course, and like I love having it in my stomach, but I think we also, it's important for me as a food photographer to think about the ways in which cultural information and knowledge is transmitted through meals and through dishes. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why I feel so tied to banana pudding.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way for me to like feel at home and feel connected to the South without all of the baggage of being there.
All right. I like that.
Yeah.
And you were recently working on a project that dealt a lot with Southern inspired food outside of the South, right?
Yeah. Well, it kind of, I was working on a project where I was spending time with a lot of black chefs in South Central.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the chefs that I was spending time with, they have a friend of theirs who makes banana pudding. I think it's called Smitty's Signature Puddings.
Okay.
So there's like, you know, just the basic banana pudding. But then he does like caramel banana pudding with homemade caramel and like red velvet cheesecake banana pudding.
Wow.
Oreo banana pudding. And for someone who has a sweet tooth and who loves banana pudding, I was like, oh my God, this is heavenly. So I ended up having the banana pudding with the homemade caramel. And halfway through, I thought I was gonna like go into sugar shock, but it was so good.
Yeah, that is a lot of sweet on sweet.
Oh, yeah. It's a lot. Like, you have to eat... I feel like you have to eat banana pudding, like, in cycles. Like, you have a few spoonfuls, you put it in the fridge, you go back.
I like that. Somewhere, I think I read a recipe for it online where they were like... You have to eat it pretty quickly, mm-hmm. but you can eat it for breakfast. Like, you're probably not going to be able to finish it. Oh, my God, your eyes.
I'm like, yeah, you can eat banana pudding for breakfast. That's a very grown-up breakfast to have.
Yes, exactly. I'm such a busy career woman. Let me just eat last night's dessert.
Perfect.
Love it. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. And you know how, there wouldn't be that textural element of the crunchy cookies, but sometimes people, you know, the whole leftovers thing is the flavors combine more. Yeah. So.
And then the vanilla wafers have a tendency to take on this nice softness. Mm-hmm. So they don't get mushy. They just kind of like melt into the pudding. Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
That's a great idea. This episode is making me so hungry in a way too. That not all of them do. Woo! So, just speaking about, like, the New Orleans and the Southern connection yeah. and the Caribbean, like you were mentioning, there was another cookbook that was published in 1898 that had a number of banana recipes. Most of them pretty simple.
Okay.
Like baked bananas, fried bananas. Yes.
Bananas flambé.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I love that. It's where you set fire to something.
It's the best.
But all her of the banana recipes were under a section called Hawaiian recipes. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. So there was definitely awareness mm-hmm. that bananas grew in Hawaii, and there was this idea, because the recipe section did have banana pudding, but that counted as Hawaiian for this particular cookbook.
That's
author.
So dope.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, I gotta look into this. This yeah. is pretty fascinating.
Yeah, definitely. I will have notes on the website when this episode goes up.
Yes.
For everyone's information. I don't know if I've ever like said that I do put all my sources up on the website.
That's really awesome.
So banana pudding really started showing up in print in newspapers, especially in the 1880s. There were differences. Sponge cake versus shortbread. Mm-hmm. Sometimes topped with meringue.
Oh, yeah.
Well, now here's where I'm like, what's the difference between banana pudding and banana cream pie?
Wow, that just blew my mind a little bit. What is the difference?
Bottom crust.
Yeah.
But with banana pudding, you're still putting cookies or some sort of baked good in there as well.
Yeah.
It's kind of just a different form, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you don't, with banana pudding, you wouldn't fold in the meringue or cream like you would with banana cream pie filling.
Well, the banana cream pie has the meringue on top.
Oh, it's the same thing, yeah. kind of.
I mean, if you're putting meringue on your banana pudding, it's yeah. going to be on top.
Yeah.
So I'm just not sure what the difference is.
I mean, I think I've always had banana pudding topped with, like, was it Miracle Whip?
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you really didn't go like the hippie version when you were growing up.
No, it was just, it was sugar and everything. Food coloring.
Yeah. You know what's yeah. interesting about that, though, is that for a lot of people who grow up eating something store-bought mm-hmm. and they think it's delicious and then they eat it as an adult and they can't handle it, it's because our taste buds do change
they
over
do.
Time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, my palate is way more refined than when I was a kid.
Which you would hope for, right? You yeah. would want it to be less refined.
Yeah, I mean... I have some moments where I'm like, oh my God, why am I eating this?
I'm not going to lie. I love a chicken McNugget.
So I haven't had fast food in what has to be like 4 or 5 years.
Nice.
And like 2 months ago, I just had this real craving for the McChicken sandwich. And I went and I got 3 of them.
Yes.
And smashed every single one.
Yes. Nicely done.
Like, oh, I'm living my best life.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing I think about food. Like, even though my palate is refined enough to say, appreciate like how brilliant the banana pudding take at Go Get 'Em Tiger is, it doesn't for me fulfill that part of my brain that remembers all of those flavors and all the memories that come with eating the like Jell-O pudding box stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like, it's hard to also transmit that kind of emotional information. And so I think like, even though I know like, oh, all of this crap is bad for me and it doesn't taste that great, something goes off in my brain where I'm like, yes, This is everything I wanted.
I totally understand that.
Yeah.
That's kind of, for me, I think my equivalent is Ben and Jerry's ice cream.
Oh, yeah.
Because in the last 5 years or so, there's really been this explosion of, like, really expensive, but usually, well, not even usually, sometimes rightly so,
yeah,
pints of, like, smaller batch,
yep,
ice cream. If you go back and have, like, dryers now.
That shit is disgusting.
I know. And it's, I feel so bad because I grew up on it.
Same.
But the other day I really wanted a root beer float.
Oh yeah.
And I did a little taste test because you know how they have those little single serving ones. So I got dryers, mm-hmm, and then I got Häagen-Dazs vanilla because I've always had this theory that when you have a root beer float, you want to get like the shittiest of both the vanilla ice,
agreed,
cream and the root beer.
Yeah.
But I took, as it's on its own,
mm-hmm,
I had a spoonful of the dryers vanilla and I was like, this is not good.
Yeah.
This tastes of chemicals.
Yep.
You can taste the fake vanilla in it. And it's weird because right now I'm having this like sense of guilt about even saying that.
I feel that. Yeah, like how could you betray that?
Yeah. 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 But Ben and Jerry's, I feel like, is kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
The quality isn't that great.
Yeah.
But I will go to town on coffee toffee.
I feel
like
that.
Like it's my last day.
You know what? Speaking of Southern foods. So back when I was in college and a stoner, one of my favorite things to do was to get the Willie Nelson peach cobbler,
okay,
Ben and Jerry's,
mm-hmm,
and I would just eat a whole pint by myself because I was disgusting like that.
Hey, you know what? I mean, we can give up the lie that we don't all do that, right?
Yeah, I feel like everyone has their stories.
Yeah.
I'm not the first person to go face deep in a pint of Ben and Jerry's,
no,
and I won't be the last person.
No.
It's like a shared human experience.
It really is.
But yeah, like I had that not too long ago and I was like, this is really not that great.
Yeah.
Like why did I like this so much?
Well, I think we didn't know better because when Ben yep, and Jerry's became, because it's been a shop for longer than we've been alive.
Yeah.
But when they started selling it in grocery stores, it was the hotness.
Yeah. And you felt like fancy.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh yeah, I can afford this $4 thing of ice cream.
Yeah.
I'm gonna treat myself.
Yeah. And now they have $10 pints.
I know.
At the grocery store.
I know.
But let me tell you something. Some of them are better than others.
I wholeheartedly agree.
Oof.
Wholeheartedly agree. And I'm always trying to catch a sale on the ones that I really like.
Yeah. Because they do have those at like Gelson's and stuff all,
yep,
the time. Sales on ice cream.
Yeah. And then we get like 6 pints of ice cream for no reason. And I should also mention I'm lactose intolerant.
What are you doing?
I don't care about my life. I'm reckless. When it comes to ice cream, I will do anything for a good scoop of ice cream.
Have you gone to McConnell's?
You know, I don't really dig McConnell's.
Whoa.
I know.
Now we're in a fight.
I know.
McConnell's, for everyone who's listening, is right next to Go Get 'Em Tiger, and they share a patio.
Yeah.
How can you not? I don't know what to do with you.
I know. You know what? I think it's Salt and Straw's fault.
You like them better?
I don't know if it's that I like them better, but I went in there with a friend who was visiting from Chicago, and we were like, oh, this ice cream's really pricey. And my friend Kiki was like, they actually have an ice cream flight where you get a scoop of 4 flavors,
mm-hmm,
for like $10.
Mm-hmm.
And I went bonkers.
Okay.
And I think just because of the value, I'm like, Salt and Straw is the best.
Whatever. McConnell's does an ice cream flight too.
Wait, they do?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to go back.
I think it only has 3 flavors for $10, though, so you're still going to be outraged.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, you know what? You know it'll do it for me?
What?
If McConnell's comes out with a bomb banana pudding flavor, I'm sold for life.
Well, McConnell's, get on it.
Hit me up.
Because you know she shoots those good Instagram food porn shots.
I try. So,
if you want in on that action.
We'll shoot for banana pudding ice cream.
Yeah, seriously. Oh my gosh. Okay, now, did you know that Nabisco is short for National Biscuit Company?
No.
That was the original name of the company.
Oh my God.
And they shortened it to be more cute.
I like that.
They started National Biscuit Company, as it was then known, started making vanilla wafers commercially in the 1920s. Important to note, they were not called Nilla wafers until the 60s.
What?
Yeah.
Was that another, like, let's make this short and cute
I'm
and,
sure,
like, sellable?
I'm sure.
I love it.
Yeah. They changed it. Now, see, I like your theory about why banana pudding is associated with the South. a lot more than everything else I've read, including this theory that I'm about to share with you. Well, it's a little bit different. It's more like how it became Southern later on. So there's this great Serious Eats article about the history of banana pudding. And the writer of it actually tracked the mentions of banana pudding in newspapers over the last 100 years.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
What?
And whereas it went from being sort of like spread out everywhere, mm-hmm. the mentions, over time, it became more and more Southern.
Yep.
By the 1980s, over 80% of all mentions of banana pudding in American newspapers were specifically in Southern newspapers.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It's kind of a chicken or the egg situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what happened? There's cultural theories, too, about it being like good, like potluck food.
Oh, that totally makes sense. It's cheap to make.
Yeah.
It's easy to carry around.
Yeah.
You know, like no one's going to say no to banana pudding at a potluck.
Now, I've barely been to the United States, but it was my understanding that the Midwest was big on potluck culture as well.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
So I don't know why it would be like more Southern than Midwestern, but who cares? Like Southerners like owning it.
Yeah.
So
I mean, like I don't claim too much of my Southern heritage, but I will fight someone if they try to claim banana pudding anywhere else in the country.
Okay,
that's like the one thing where I'm like, no, that's ours.
Yeah,
that's strictly Southern. You cannot have that.
Okay.
And I think it's just because of the like the brilliance of banana pudding in the South and the prevalence of it.
Mm-hmm.
So like my family, half of my family is immigrant from Haiti. The other half, is from the Mississippi Delta area. And I just cannot think of one family gathering where banana pudding was not present.
I love that.
It was like a sin to not have the banana pudding there. And there's always someone who like was in charge of the banana pudding. Someone was in charge of the potato salad. Someone was in charge of the ribs. Like everyone had their thing that they made. And so for me growing up, it was my grandmother and two of her sisters.
Haitian side or Mississippi side?
Mississippi side.
Okay.
Yeah. The Haitians were like, what the fuck is banana pudding? Why are you guys putting plantains in a dessert? They didn't get it. But the Southern side of the family was like, no, we're doing what? Who's coming over? More than five of us are going to be in a room together? Someone's got to make the banana pudding.
All right.
Yeah.
And did people within your same family have variations on it, or does everyone make it the same?
I think for the most part, everyone makes it the same out of the box, except for my paternal grandmother. Mm-hmm. She always makes it with her custard.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I think that that's a recipe that she got from her mother, if I'm not mistaken. So my great-grandmother, who I never had an opportunity to meet,
mm-hmm.
Was famous for her desserts. In particular, the banana pudding, her caramel cake, and then there was like a Coca-Cola cake.
Oh, interesting. I've never heard of such a thing.
Southerners do weird shit with Coke.
Yeah, yeah.
With Coca-Cola. not with cocaine.
Cocaine cake sounds delightful, though.
Man, I
can't. Keep you up for days.
I wouldn't be surprised if someone slipped that into the coconut cake back in the day. I gotta look into this.
I mean, that seems like a thing that like jokester uncles in the 80s would definitely do.
Right? Right? Yeah. So yeah, there wasn't too much variation, and I'm trying to think if there was even any like within the South regional variation. I'm sure there was.
Yeah, or at least initially.
Yeah.
And I would think that for some people the Jell-O versus non-Jell-O debate would be a fierce one.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I could imagine fights breaking out about that.
Yeah.
But I always think about it as like, especially in terms of like what's accessible, what's cheap, what you don't have to put too much thought into making, you mm-hmm. know? I feel like that's where the Jell-O versus custard thing comes in. Like, how much work do you want to put into this banana pudding?
Yeah.
A lot or none.
Right, right. How you much know? Time do you have? Well, it's kind of a thing, too, where I bet a lot of people do make homemade banana pudding,
yep.
but they also keep a box of Jell-O powder
yep.
in the cupboard just in case.
Yep.
If you don't time your day right.
Exactly. Or if you just don't, you know, you don't feel like slaving in front of the stove. You're like, no one's going to know.
Yeah.
Really. They can't tell too much.
They're just going to like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all you need.
Yeah. For people to like it.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming and talking about this dessert.
Thank you for having me.
I didn't know anything about it. It's so exciting.
This was awesome.
Where can people find you on social media?
You can find me on Instagram at Oriana Corinne, all one word. And then my website, OrianaCorinne.com. That's about where I am.
Awesome. Perfect. And people should be looking for your photos all over, right?
All over the place. New York Times. I've got a story I'm really proud of that's coming out in the July issue of the California Sunday magazine.
Yeah.
So definitely keep eyes peeled for that. And then I might be shooting some other fun stuff regarding fast food. Oh. Can't talk about that too much. Awesome. I am actually working on a personal project about the foodways in the South and relating that to the transatlantic slave trade. So that's in the works.
Oh my God. We're going to have you back on to talk about that when
you're
ready.
Oh, please do.
That sounds fascinating.
I've learned so many cool things. I would love to come back and talk about it.
Good. Yes. Done. It's a date.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for joining us on Smart Mouth.
Thank you for having me.
Table Cakes production.